it's very humbling. You've seen some of these important figures from a good part of your life, and you're, you know, very honored to be able to serve with them.
Dan Sullivan is sworn in as U.S. Senator. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, January 6th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the Republican majority in the state legislature hires a communications expert Parnell asked to resign.
It's only 90 days, but we need all the help we can to get our message out to the general public and our constituents.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2015 Directory for Older Alaskans. To order the directory or learn more, go to SeniorVoiceAlaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan was sworn in today in the U.S. Senate chamber by Vice President Joe Biden. Sullivan is celebrating the milestone in a series of receptions and dinners in Washington this week, attended by scores of Alaskan supporters and family members. APRN's Liz Ruskin attended one and reports on Sullivan's first day in the Senate.
The Capitol complex is filled with receptions on the first day of a new session. Sullivan's people crowded into a hearing room where the hors d'oeuvres included a big slab of smoked salmon. It was standing room only, and it spilled into the hallway of the Russell Senate office building. Sullivan said the reception was intended to thank all his supporters, in and out of state.
Talking to Julie, I said, I'm going to send this to all our Alaska supporters. Long way to go, pretty expensive airplane ticket, maybe 20 or 30 Alaskans who would come. And I think at last count, we have well over 200 Alaskans.
Alaskan guests included Governor Walker and state legislators Click Bishop, Lynn Gaddis, and Bill Stoltz. Alaska political consultants Art and April Hackney mingled with D.C. strategists Carl Forte and Mike Dubke. Former Attorney General Greg Rankis attended, as did developer Bob Penny and Washington lobbyists with long ties to the Alaska delegation like Duncan Smith and David Russell. Sullivan's parents came, along with his brother, Frank Sullivan, CEO of RPM International, the paint company founded by the family. Sullivan said he had too many relatives in the room to name them all.
I got a million cousins and nieces and nephews and brothers and sisters and sisters-in-laws and brothers-in-laws.
After the official swearing-in, the new senator went back to the Capitol for another swearing-in, also with Vice President Biden. But this one was for the cameras in the ornate old Senate chamber, one senator at a time, with each family gathered round. The procession ran long as Biden kissed every baby, congratulated the elderly, and signed family Bibles. When the freshman senator from Colorado came up, Biden called his grandma on a cell phone. Sullivan, when it was his turn, introduced his teenage daughters.
This is Megan. This is Isabella. This is Laurel. This is the Vice President.
Nice to meet you.
And then his parents.
Dad.
Hey,
Mom. Sullivan and Sandra Sullivan.
Congratulations, Mom. Congratulations. Dad, congratulations.
And my father-in-law, Bud Fink.
Hey, Bud, how are you? Congratulations to you guys.
So this is the team.
All right. Mom, actually, you come on over here, Mom. And Dad.
Earlier in the real Senate chamber, as senators filtered in, Sullivan found his desk and shook hands with new colleagues. He spoke briefly to Senator John McCain and had a longer chat with Senator Jim Inhofe, who chairs one of the committees Sullivan will sit on. Senator Ted Cruz, who campaigned for Sullivan in Alaska, came by to say hello. Outside, in the corridor, Sullivan wasn't letting it go to his head.
That's very humbling, and you know, and there's a element there where you've seen some of these important figures from a good part of your life, and you're, you know, very honored to be able to serve with them.
As a freshman with the lowest seniority, Sullivan's desk in the Senate is not in the room's power spot. It's on an outer edge, third row in, next to Iowa's new senator, Joni Ernst. Still, it's the United States Senate. So it's one of the most powerful seats in the country and the world. In Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
A recently ousted military affairs official has been hired by the Alaska Senate majority to guide their media strategy. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reports.
McHugh Pierre was asked in September to step down as Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs as part of then-Governor Sean Parnell's attempts to reform the Alaska National Guard. His resignation came shortly after the release of a federal report that concluded the Guard suffered from leadership failures, a toxic command climate, and favoritism. The next month, Pierre established a public relations firm, Quantum Communications. Now, Pierre has been brought on to help the Senate's Republican Majority Caucus in their communications with the press. Senate President Kevin Meyer made the hire, and he considers it essential.
It's only 90 days, but we need all the help we can to get our message out to the general public and our constituents.
Last month, Meyer joined other legislative leaders in calling upon Governor Bill Walker to enact a staffing freeze in response to a multi-billion dollar budget shortfall. Because his caucus's press office had a vacancy, Meyer doesn't see that order conflicting with Pierre's hire. He adds Pierre will not be on payroll as a state worker, but instead will be awarded a four-month contract paid out of the Senate majority's funds. Meyer says this was done in an effort to be frugal. The contract has yet to be signed, but Meyer says it will not exceed $35,000. Anything over that amount requires a vote of the 14-member Legislative Council.
My expectations would be it'll be closer to $30,000.
Meyer says he interviewed other candidates for the position before reaching out to Pierre. He adds that he asked his colleagues if they took issue with the hire. Senator Anna McKinnon, an Eagle River Republican who will co-chair the Finance Committee, noted that Pierre was married to her chief of staff, but did not find that to be a problem. Meyer says McKinnon's office was not involved with the hire. Nor, for that matter, was Meyer's own wife, who is a special assistant in the Military Affairs Commissioner's Office and a former colleague of Pierre's.
Absolutely not. My wife is so non-political that she didn't even know about it till I mentioned it to her last night.
When Pierre stepped down from his deputy commissioner post in September, his letter listed his accomplishments and expressed an enthusiasm for new adventures in the private sector. But it did not make any reference to problems in the Alaska National Guard, which reached a crisis level during the Parnell administration. Parnell did not provide a reason for Pierre's dismissal, except to say that it was connected to his National Guard reform effort. Records released in response to a lawsuit by Alaska Public Media and the Alaska Dispatch News contain a June email from Parnell to his top aides ordering that Pierre, quote, have absolutely nothing to do with cases where Guard members are under investigation or subject to review, especially as they relate to two people he is personally connected to. After Pierre reportedly involved himself in a former classmate's disciplinary matter. Separately, chaplains who had confronted the governor and legislators about the mishandling of sexual assault in the Alaska National Guard have complained that Pierre directed them to sign a confidentiality agreement. Senator Kevin Meyer says he took into account Pierre's resignation when deciding to award him the contract, but that he could not find any concrete information that Pierre acted inappropriately.
I've asked around to try to figure out what he has been accused of or what he's guilty of, and nobody knows. So I don't know how much of that was political hype and how much of that is reality. But certainly if we find out that he was involved in any way that's illegal, then we would terminate his contract immediately.
Meyer was not familiar with Parnell's email on Pierre. In a phone interview, Pierre noted his status as an appointee meant the governor could dismiss him for any reason or no reason at all, and stressed that he had done nothing wrong. Pierre says he will not handle communication strategy related to the Alaska National Guard. In Juneau, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
Representative Kathy Munoz, a Republican from Juneau, will reintroduce a bill this legislative session to make discrimination based on sexual orientation illegal. Former Juneau Representative Beth Kurtula, a Democrat, introduced the same bill in 2011 and then again in 2013. Munoz co-sponsored the legislation in 2013. She says she hopes the bill will hold more weight this time with her Republican colleagues.
We'll see how it goes, but I definitely think it's appropriate and it's needed, and I'm willing to put my energy into making it happen.
Kurtula first introduced the bill a year before Anchorage residents voted against adding sexual orientation to the municipality's anti-discrimination laws. The 2015 legislative session begins January 20th. Lawmakers' pre-filed bills will be released over the next 2 weeks. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a photographer tracks down centenarians in all 50 states.
Kind of amazing that on the first day of the project that I had a lead, at least for what was going to be the hardest subject to find, a man in Alaska who's over 100.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Enroll now in the Health Insurance Marketplace. Sign up at healthcare.gov. Open enrollment ends February 15th. Depending on your income, age, and family size, you may be eligible for discounts that may lower your monthly cost and out-of-pocket expenses. Pick a plan that is right for you and your family. Call 211 for free individual assistance about the Health Insurance Marketplace. Visit GetCoveredAlaska.org for more information. This message sponsored by Ashna, a partner of Get Covered Alaska.
A fuel spill on the remote island of Adak will cost Aleut Enterprise more than $1 million in court settlements and damages. The price tag became final this month after the company reached a deal with state prosecutors. KUCB's Lauren Rosenthal has more.
The spill took place back in January of 2010. A tanker was unloading fuel at Adak Petroleum, a subsidiary of Aleut Enterprise. The receiving tank and a secondary containment system overflowed, spilling 70,000 gallons of diesel fuel into nearby Helmet Creek. From there, it flowed into Sweeper Cove and into Adak's small boat harbor. The spill took almost a year to clean up. Just about 5,000 gallons of fuel were ever recovered. After an investigation by state and federal authorities, Alaska's Office of Special Prosecutions filed a criminal case in 2013. Prosecutor Carol Hawley says that Aleut Enterprise has been fully cooperative. That's why the state agreed to drop criminal charges and pursue a $500,000 civil penalty instead, the maximum allowable under state law.
Our goal is to make sure that the environment is protected, that we conserve our resources, and that companies really take their obligations and responsibility to the state seriously. And Aleut did so in this case.
On top of the civil penalty, Aleut Enterprise is paying another $200,000 to improve their environmental compliance programs around the state. They also operate a fuel facility in Cold Bay. And Aleut Enterprise already agreed to pay more than $250,000 to cover environmental assessments and monitoring at the spill site. As for the former fuel facility manager, Hawley says state prosecutors have also reached a deal with Michael Baker. He was present the day of the spill, and he's pleaded guilty to violating his company's oil discharge plans and failing to test equipment for detecting overflows. Baker will pay a $2,000 fine and serve 40 hours of community service. Hawley says that will happen at an environmental organization near Baker's new home in Florida. Baker and Aleut Enterprise could not be reached for comment. In on Alaska, I'm Lauren Rosenthal.
Annual giving in the Pick, Click, Give program has grown robustly since its 2009 launch, though the total number of donors appears to be tapering off. This year, program officials have brought back the Double Your Dividend sweepstakes to attract donors, and organizations will be charged a new 7% administrative fee. KTOO's Jeremy Shea has more.
There's been double-digit percentage growth in the amount given to Alaska nonprofits through Pick, Click, Give since its launch. The program makes it easy for Alaskans to give part of their permanent fund dividends to charities. Almost 27,000 people donated about $2.8 million in 2014. However, the growth in the number of people giving is down.
So we sometimes wonder if people are thinking back to the dividend that they just received a couple of months earlier.
Heather Beattie of the Alaska Community Foundation manages Pick, Click, Give. The payout in 2013 was about half of last year's, the third biggest in the history of dividends.
We have speculated that having a lower PFD amount may have affected the rate of participation.
Tim Bluest is a bookkeeper with Discovery Southeast, a Juneau nonprofit with an outdoor education mission. Last year, he goosed his organization's books a little with a personal donation through Pick, Click, Give. In the fall, he got a coy phone message from Beattie.
My 12-year-old son immediately said, "Dad, you must have won." And I said, "Won what?"
His son was right. Bluest was one of 10 winners of the Double Your Dividend drawing that Pick, Click, Give donors entered. The sweepstakes launched last March, the final month of the dividend sign-up period. It was meant to counter low giving caused by technical problems in what's usually a busy January. It's hard to suss out exactly what effect the sweepstakes had, but Beattie says,
"We did see Pick, Click, Give participation go up quite a bit while we were promoting the sweepstakes. So we decided to go ahead and implement it again this year, hoping that it continues to encourage more Alaskans to make donations through Pick, Click, Give."
One change this year affecting participating organizations is a new 7% administrative fee. The fee is meant to replace temporary grant funding, largely from the Rasmussen Foundation, used to get the program going. Organizations will continue to pay a separate $250 filing fee. Last year, the legislature unanimously created the new fee while also relaxing some requirements. The sentiment among several local nonprofit officials was that it's too bad to lose the revenue, but worth the convenience. Rasmussen President and CEO Diane Kaplan said in a recent blog post that the new fee is a sign of the program's sustainability and maturity. Dividends are expected to grow again in 2015. The value of the dividend is based on a rolling 5-year average of permanent fund investment gains and losses. In Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea.
A draft economic plan for the city and borough of Juneau identifies 8 key initiatives to guide the capital city's financial future over the next decade. As KTOO's Casey Kelly reports, most of those initiatives and the specific goals discussed in the plan have been city priorities for years.
Enhance essential infrastructure, build the senior economy, expand Juneau's role as a research center, protect the capital city, promote affordable housing. Sound familiar? Those are 5 of the broad initiatives discussed in the draft Juneau Economic Plan. The others are to attract and prepare the next generation workforce, build on strengths, and revitalize downtown.
We are in pretty good shape as a community economically.
Jim Calvin is with the McDowell Group, which, along with Scheinberg Associates, developed the 10-year economic plan for the Juneau Assembly.
Relatively high per capita and household incomes and strong visitor industry, strong mining industry. We have a lot of great assets to build on. So I think we're coming at this from a position of strength as a community, which is certainly better than venturing into economic development when you're in recession or otherwise struggling.
Each initiative discussed in the plan includes specific goals or objectives for city officials to work on. Some of those are long-discussed city priorities as well, a second bridge to Douglas Island, expanding the availability of childcare, and increasing the number of starter homes, to name a few. Calvin says these issues have long been barriers to economic growth in Juneau.
Housing is a case in point. It's really a fundamental underlying foundation for Juneau's economy, and we at the moment have a housing market that's acting as a constraint on economic development.
The draft economic plan was released Wednesday on the web. Calvin will present details to the Juneau Assembly on Monday. The specifics shouldn't come as a shock to Assembly members who've been receiving periodic updates on the project for almost a year. Mayor Merrill Sanford says the next step is to adopt the plan and implement its recommendations.
There's a lot of good goals and a lot of good objectives. We're going to have to prioritize them and figure out which ones we need to do first.
Sanford thinks the $100,000 the city spent on the plan was worth it.
It just puts everything into perspective and says, Assembly members, here are the things, some of the things that you've been working on diligently trying to get accomplished. It backs those up and supports them. And then it's given us a couple of other avenues to go down to get to an end result.
The mayor says the Assembly hopes to adopt the plan by the end of February. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the field. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. If you are a rural Alaskan knowledgeable about fish and wildlife resources in your region, please consider applying for one of the 35 seats on your Federal Subsistence Regional Advisory Councils. Council meetings serve as a forum for regional public involvement in federal subsistence management. Apply by January 23, 2015. Information at 1-800-478-1456 or email subsistence@fws.gov. This message sponsored by U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
State fish and game officials are cracking down on illegal dumping on state game refuges. As KSKA's Ellen Lockyer reports, heavy fines and possible jail time is in store for offenders. Recent incidents at Goose Bay State Game Refuge near Wasilla have resulted in at least one prosecution, and Alaska wildlife troopers are on the lookout for further arrests.
Even in the grainy black and white surveillance camera photo, the three young men are obviously in their 20s and are ready to dump an old washer and dryer out of their small truck in the Goose Bay State Game Refuge parking lot. The three were caught on camera breaking the law. Joe Meehan, statewide coordinator for the refuge program, says the three then used the appliances for target practice, further polluting state property.
And that's just repeating this whole cycle of dumping garbage and lead contamination. So we're going to keep on top of it. We're not going to tolerate it. The users of the refuge don't want it to continue, and we're going to try to stop it as best we can by continuing to clean up and catching and prosecuting people when we can catch them.
Meehan says when the trio are located, possible fines of up to $10,000 and up to a year of jail time await them under fish and game law.
Yeah, it's been a long time problem. It's been going on out there at Goose Bay for decades. It kind of became the culture of use for people to drag their old refrigerators, TVs, computers, couches, furniture, stolen vehicles, junk vehicles, bring them out there and target practice with them and then just leave all their garbage behind.
Since 2010, the state has spent $100,000 cleaning up Goose Bay. With the help of the Alaska National Guard, about 107 tons of debris has been removed, including about 75 vehicles, 40 car batteries, and other hazardous materials. Recent cleanup efforts have aimed to mitigate lead deposits that remain in the refuge from years of target shooting.
We ran into the same problem in the Palmer Hay Flat State Game Refuge, that people just get accustomed to doing it. It's where they go dispose of their garbage. It's where they go and target shoot. And if we can clean it up, fix it up, and attract people to go in there and use this for legitimate activities like hunting and fishing and bird watching and photography, eventually you'll displace that illegal activity.
This week, a 20-year-old Wasilla man, Ian Beal, was fined $1,000 for dumping two truckloads of roofing material at Goose Bay State Game Refuge. Beal was easily traced through evidence gathered by refuge officials, and he pleaded guilty in December. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
A New York photographer wants to create portraits of a 100-year-old man and a 100-year-old woman from each of the 50 states. He's calling the project To Live 10,000 Years, and he recently checked a couple hundred of those years off his list during a trip to Ketchikan. KRBD's Layla Carey has more.
Danny Goldfield thought that Alaska would be the most difficult state to find centenarians, especially a man, but it turned out to be pretty easy. Goldfield knew someone from Alaska, and one connection is all you really need in a state where everyone is closely connected. So he sent an email, his friend made a call, and there you have it.
Kind of amazing that on the first day of the project that I had a lead, at least for what was going to be the hardest subject, to find a man in Alaska who's over 100.
That 100-year-old man is Henry Nelligan, an Alaska native who also is a veteran of the World War II-era Alaska Territorial Guard. Nelligan eats lunch almost every day at the Ketchikan Indian Community Cafeteria. Goldfield joined him there for soup, salad, and sandwiches, as well as conversation and, of course, photographs.
You want to see some of what I got so far?
No, I can't read that.
You can't see it? You can't read the screen?
To me, it's just a blur. Even big letters I can't read.
Oh, that's too bad.
I leave it too long, I guess.
Conversation is part of the process. Goldfield says he's naturally curious about people and enjoys talking with each of his subjects.
I don't really have much of an agenda or questions that I need answered. I'm just happy to sort of, you know, just be with them and wait and hear kind of what they have to offer and what they have to say and let sort of maybe their stream of consciousness and let that inform the conversation. And it's the same way with the photography. Like, I don't have any expectations of what kind of images I'm going to get. I just sort of wait and let things happen and try to make it as natural as possible. I mean, in a perfect situation, I'm almost invisible.
Goldfield says he started this project in part because his own parents are getting older. That made him think about aging in the United States, so he decided to focus his lens on the growing community of older Americans. It's early days still for Goldfield's project, which he expects will take about 2 years to complete. Before coming to Ketchikan, he photographed centenarians in Maryland, Connecticut, and New Hampshire, and after Alaska, Goldfield planned more West Coast stops. This has been a learning experience for Goldfield. He says that before starting this project, he had a pretty bleak view of what it was like to be an older American. Now, though, he has a different picture of that world.
There's a lot of people out there looking out for the elders in our communities, and it's really actually been more encouraging than discouraging, which is nice, right?
Goldfield acknowledges that his project probably leads him to seniors who are well cared for. Another lesson learned is that the senior community is a woman's world.
You know, 80% of centenarians are women. Most older adults are women. Most of the, it'll be a daughter inevitably that's caring for an elder in a family. A lot of the people that are working in different organizations are women. So sometimes, you know, we hear this all stuff, you know, the politics of gender, of that's a man's world. Well, I have found a world that is definitely a woman's world, and it's the world of older adults.
Speaking of women, Goldfield was able to find an Alaska woman in Ketchikan to photograph as well, 107-year-old Margaret McCombs. She lives at the Ketchikan Pioneers Home. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Layla Carey.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Jennifer Canfield, Jeremy Shea, and Casey Kelly in Juneau, Lauren Rosenthal in Unalaska, Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage, and Layla Carey in Ketchikan. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reported from Juneau and Liz Ruskin from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by the 2015 statewide BP Teachers of Excellence Program. Teacher nomination forms are available at bpteachers.com. And by First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Alaska Pacific University offers the APU Promise Tuition Grant, a program designed to significantly minimize or eliminate out-of-pocket tuition expenses for Pell-eligible students. Deadline to apply is March 1, 2015. Alaska Pacific University is a private nonprofit offering small class sizes with a student-centered approach in the arts and sciences. More at 1-800-252-7528. This message is sponsored by APU.
Whether visiting Barrow or attending business in Juneau, APRN goes with listeners wherever they roam. Your company's message can span across Alaska on 26 stations. Find out how by calling 907-550-8437.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.